know you can't meditate. If you afraid, then you come along with me. And I know what you came here to do. Now let me see you get loose.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio. This is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
What's up, everybody? Happy Thursday. Nathan Zgura, Matt Wilhelm with you here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Of course, a lot to get to on Thursdays. We're going to start at 1:30 with defense coordinator Jim O'Neill, who's got to feel a sense of relief and pride over what the Browns were able to accomplish against the San Francisco 49ers on the defensive side of the ball. 1:45, we'll break down the Browns versus the Seahawks, looking at the defenses and the special teams. Who's got the advantage there? We'll keep you waiting with bated breath to let you know. 2 o'clock, Liz Matthews, Seahawks reporter and producer for ESPN 710 in Seattle, will be here to preview the Hawks and the Browns. At 2:15, it's an offensive preview of the game where we look at the offensive line, tight ends, wide receivers, running backs, and quarterbacks. And then 2:30, offensive coordinator John DeFilippo, plus we'll get your calls and tweets. And also, don't forget, tonight the Mike Pettine Show is on remote at Tony K's on Bagley Road right here in Berea from 7 to 8 tonight. Stop by and you can meet Caw-caw! The Crow, Isaiah Crowell, as well as me and the cousin of Mo Pedman, Ken Carmen.
Did you have to barter to get the Crow there?
I didn't have to barter.
That's good.
Why would I have to barter?
Well, because he's your guy, to make sure that it was the Crow.
Well, we'll see. He's 0-for-1 so far on remote appearances, so hopefully this time he makes it. Last time he ran into a little bit of a distraction. Was not able to attend. So hopefully he'll be out there. He will be out there tonight. Tony K's, Bagley Road in Berea, 7-8. Stop by and see us. Obviously, the big story going around the airwaves, media people having a field day with it. It was, in fact, the top headline at Roto World for a while. Mike Pettine says Russell Wilson is not elite. And listen, I think he praised Russell Wilson. What he said is that he doesn't consider Russell Wilson to be a transcendent quarterback like a Tom Brady or an Aaron Rodgers or a Ben Roethlisberger or a Drew Brees, the kind of guy that completely can do it all on his own without the right system and or supporting cast. Now, he has not backtracked from that comment, but I think he's tried to clarify that comment a little bit more today, and we'll have that audio for you, but I have no problem with it. Russell Wilson is not an elite quarterback. Russell Wilson is a very good quarterback in a great system. Now, he is playing right now like an elite quarterback. Right
yes.
Now, he is playing on absolute fire. He is tearing the league apart. But you've got to remember, Russell Wilson, and the funny thing about it is now he's doing it without Marshawn Lynch, although you can certainly make the case that they were a more effective rushing team, and the numbers back it up with Thomas Rawls this year than Lynch. Rawls averaging 2 yards per carry more than Lynch did on the season. But let's look at Russell Wilson. You look at his numbers right now, they're very good. 28 touchdowns, 6 interceptions on the season. Russell Wilson has thrown in his last 4 games 16 touchdowns, no interceptions. Okay, let me say that again. 16 touchdowns and no interceptions in his last 4 games. In the first 9 games, he threw 9 touchdowns with 7 interceptions.
Okay.
So he's playing in an elite, but on the season, on the whole, he has not been an elite quarterback. Again, Russell Wilson I consider to be a very good quarterback, but I am not ready to give him that level, that label that I would hold for guys like Tom Brady, like Aaron Rodgers, like a Ben Roethlisberger.
No, and the funny thing is, all those guys that you just named, you most likely just named great quarterbacks that have played their best football over the course of years, and you didn't name the NFL's MVP.
Cameron Newton, and I do believe Cam Newton is an elite quarterback because I think he can do it by himself, and it's a good point. He can do it by himself in the sense that you look at that supporting cast, it's non-existent. What he does as a run-pass option, and I know Russell Wilson, believe me, can run the football, but Cam Newton is not only quarterback, he's also goal line back for that team. And you look at his numbers this year for Cam Newton, 28 touchdowns passing, 10 interceptions, 7 more touchdowns rushing, and 480 rushing yards. Russell Wilson, similar number of rushing yards on the season, only 1 rushing touchdown. Cam is basically that goal line back as well for them, and he's a guy who in his last 4 games, 13 passing touchdowns, only 1 interception, plus he's run for a touchdown. These guys are playing as well as anybody in the league. The only thing is, when you think about it as a player, all that Russell Wilson's going to see and all they're going to say in the headlines is just that headline. He said you're not elite. The head coach of the Browns, who are sitting where they are this season, just came out and said you are not elite.
And in that Seattle locker room on the offensive and defensive side of the football, what are they going to reverberate? Well, let's go show them how elite we are.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We don't need to give him any more motivation. He's playing just fine as it is right now. By the way, did you see Darius Jennings? Adios.
Yeah. Is he going to be signed to the practice squad today?
I'm guessing that that's what they hope. He clears waivers and then they sign him back to the practice squad.
But when I saw it, I immediately thought of, I don't want to say thought of you, thought of the situation that we talked about in regards to Darius Jennings getting
active
and attempts or whatever, receptions, targets in a real NFL football game in front of Dwayne Bowe.
So on the season, because I figured we should investigate this, right? On the season, Darius Jennings, okay, we're going to look at Darius Jennings and Dwayne Bowe. And they cut him, and I'm imagining, and they cut him for a running back who I was told from the Philadelphia Eagles who was a good special teams guy. Darius Jennings on the season, 7 targets, 5 catches, 35 yards. Dwayne Bowe on the season, 9 targets, 3 catches, 31 yards. Darius Jennings on the season has played, let's see, 39 plus 25. We'll do that math real quick. We're going to call that 64 snaps for Darius Jennings on the season. 64 snaps for Darius Jennings.
Still 38 for Bowe?
Dwayne Bowe. I think it's 40. Let's see.
41?
Let's see. On the year, Dwayne Bowe, 38 snaps.
38.
So this guy in 2 games played more snaps than Dwayne Bowe all year. He had 7 targets. He had 5 catches. And then they released him. So obviously, I do think they want to bring him back. It's just one of those things where, you know, a lot of people were speculating on in the locker room, well, this guy was activated over Dwayne Bowe. He's playing over Dwayne Bowe. He's done everything you've wanted him to do all year, and now you cut him, but Dwayne Bowe's still here. Does that matter in the locker room? People, is that something? Or is Darius Jennings not on the radar in the locker room?
At this point right now, when you're 3-10, coming off a victory, knowing what you have in front of you with the final 3 football games, you're not putting things together the way we do. You know, you're not thinking that in that rationale. You're not trying to rationalize every move that's made because, I'll be honest, other than maybe the wide receiver group or maybe the offensive side of the football, the defensive, a new guy's going to come out there with a new jersey on and a name, maybe a no nameplate for a day and then a nameplate on his back, and you'll see him on the plane as you fly out to Seattle. And, I mean, unless you're really, like, standing next to him, you don't even introduce yourself at this point in the season. It's like a guy.
Jag.
Sure.
Just a guy.
Call him Brownie. Whatever you want to call him.
I like Jag. Just a guy. Hey, there he is, the offensive coordinator of the Cleveland Browns, John D. Football. Always happy on Thursdays when he walks by the studio. I think it's us. I think he's
not intimidated by the media.
He is not. He's not intimidated by the media. The media likes him. He's been probably, outside of Josh McCown, the biggest media darling in this organization this season.
Johnny Manziel, what do you mean?
Two and two
quarterback, Johnny Manziel.
Football. So we will hear, by the way, Mike Pettine, who clarified his remarks, and I'll give you kind of just a sneak peek on that about Russell Wilson. And he's smart at this point. He's like not trying to fan the flames. He said, every quarterback that's ever played is tied for one, the best ever, he says, making a joke. But he obviously thinks that he is very, very, very good in terms of Russell Wilson. He said, it's not my job to rank quarterbacks. I know the bottom line for those guys. And he said himself is to win football games, and he's one of the best at that. This isn't the first time that I've said a lot on one topic, and one small fragment of it was made into a headline, which is true, which is what I said. I mean, I heard the comments yesterday. We listened to that presser. We played it here. I didn't come away from that thinking, oh, okay, he just went out of his way to diss Russell Wilson. I thought it was very complimentary of Russell Wilson, but it's funny how that's the headline. Russell Wilson's not elite. Well, he's not elite. He's very good.
Right.
But he's not elite.
And I think
if you disbanded the league and you said you have 1 year, so it's not, you're not worried about age. You disbanded the league right now. Russell Wilson probably isn't even a top 10 pick.
If you were forced in a fantasy draft with 32 picks and then in a fantasy draft, and you were forced to take a quarterback in the first round, where would Russell Wilson be selected?
Fantasy or like real? Or both?
Both.
All right. In a real draft, I think he goes in the top 12.
Okay.
Maybe top 10.
Sure.
in a fantasy draft. I mean, the way he's played now. I mean, the first few weeks Russell he was Wilson. Undraftable. No, but this year with Jimmy Graham was there. They had Lynch. He was supposed to be in the top 10 this year, but he probably would go in the top 10 to 12. It's probably actually pretty similar.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, but that's where he is. He's not like people aren't like, oh, man, I wanted the first pick because I had to get Brady.
No, or Rodgers.
Or Cam. Ron.
Or Cam, yeah.
Or Big Ben, who's averaging 354 yards a game passing this season. So it's not quite like that. It's not like that.
Not even close.
He's good.
It's not even close until these last four football games.
No, and this year it's funny when you do look at the Seahawks, and again, we're not knocking the Seahawks. Believe me, this is a very good football team. It's a very complete football team. But look at their games this year. Throw out St. Louis in week one. They've only lost to the elite teams. That's it. Green Bay at Green Bay, 27-17. Cincinnati at Cincinnati in overtime in a game that they were up, if you remember, it was like 24-3. Yep. And they lost that one 27-23. And then they are 27-24. Then they lost at home to Carolina 27-23. They lost at home to Arizona 39-32. I was going through their media guide. This is an unbelievable stat. They have been either ahead or within a touchdown in the fourth quarter of 83 consecutive games.
Wow.
That's pretty impressive. So they have not been run out of the building. And as we talked about, you just go through their losses, right? What were the losses that we had? Four of them. Overtime, 34-31. 27-17 at Green Bay. So in that one, they were within 10, were within 7, then ultimately ended up not. 27-24 in overtime at Cincinnati. 39-32 at Arizona. This offense, though, the last 5 weeks, 39-29, 39-38, 35.
Good luck.
Hey, no Thomas Rawls, folks.
Plug and play.
They don't even know who's running. They got Bryce Brown. They got Christine Michaels back.
Plug and play.
Yeah, we'll see. We will see. All right, when we come back, we'll open up the phone lines, 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. Take your phone calls. We'll get your tweets. We'll hear from Mike Pettine as well as comments about Russell Wilson. Then at 1:30, it's Jim O'Neill. 1:45, the defense previews. 2 o'clock, Liz Matthews, the Seahawks reporter and producer at ESPN 710 in Seattle. 2:15, it's the offensive preview. 2:30, John DeFilippo, the offensive coordinator of the Browns. Plus your calls and tweets all show long. And don't forget again, tonight the Mike Pettine Show is on remote at Tony K's on Bagley Road in Berea. Stop by, say hello to myself, the cousin of the Duncan Dutchman, Ken Mo Pedman. Ken Carmen will be there. Jason Gibbs will be there. And caw! Isaiah Crowell will be there.
That was a fairly weak caw.
Caw!
There you go. Much better.
Caw!
Yes.
Caw, caw, caw.
I have the pitch meter.
Yes.
You didn't quite meet the pitch meter.
I'm gonna find my crow call that somebody sent me last year.
That's right.
All right, we'll be back with more CBD right after this.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Let's go ahead and hear from the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, Mike Pettine, real quickly with some humorous remarks as he clarifies what he meant about Russell Wilson.
If anyone's interested, I have my updated quarterback rankings. Every quarterback that's ever played is tied for one. Best ever. And on that note, I'll open it up. The best ever. Tied for the best ever. Because I don't want to slight anybody else when I slot somebody somewhere.
So there it is, just coming out, updating his quarterback rings. Everybody's tied for the best ever, which is smart. I think it's a good idea. Good idea. Just come out there and take some of the just take some of the sting out of it. I like that Grossi's question about
Luke Bryan liked it too.
Luke Bryan loves it. Grossi's question about
Pete Carroll.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
That was very good. All right, 216-578-0850 again. 216-578-0850. You got any questions or comments about this game, about this team? We're going to hear Jim O'Neill, of course. We talked about that. John DeFilippo, Liz Matthews. They are all coming up here on today's show. Russell Wilson, again, we know where we all stand on that. And I think this is a good game to see what Johnny Manziel, I think he's got a better arm than Russell Wilson, but to see what Johnny Manziel you hope can become in Russell Wilson. Similar size, similar athletic ability, guy who in Russell Wilson, you know, is winning more and more from the pocket, but is at his best on the edges, much like Johnny.
Sure. And you know what? Excuse me. What surprised me slightly, and I'm not trying to be negative in it by any means, but if you look into, which we have an opportunity to do, and you can find on ClevelandBrowns.com and in the Browns mobile app as well, with Johnny Manziel's press conference and him talking about Russell Wilson and being asked questions, like, do you study Russell Wilson? And his answer was no. I really don't. I can't say that I have. But if the Seahawks are on, I enjoy watching the Seahawks play. And I just thought, for a guy really wanted to take a monumental step from year one after, you know, the mess that year one was, the time that he had to himself, you know, to engage in whatever, art, music, your craft, studying film, studying others, right? That there wasn't more emphasis put on studying the guys that we thought he should be studying, like Drew Brees, like Russell Wilson.
It saddens me to hear that. I would think that that's exactly what he should be doing, studying those guys, especially a guy like Drew Brees. How does Drew Brees, at his height, similar stature to me, how does he find ways in the pocket to create throwing lanes? You know, he's not going to maybe tilt his head like Drew Brees, but how does he maneuver to overcome his lack of height? What is it about the way that he releases the football? Because Drew Brees is very up here to get that extra height. Johnny's still a little bit, and Johnny has he's a man of 1,004 release points, which I like, and it helps certainly when he's out of the pocket, but that's what you want to study, right? That's the guys that you emulate. As an inside linebacker, did you study, was there anybody in particular that you studied that maybe wasn't on your team? I mean, you had some great ones. Obviously, Junior Seau was down in San Diego.
Yeah, so but Seau played by his own rules, so it was hard. I mean, you'd have a base defense called with a four-man front, and, you know, you're in cover three, and Junior would see something. And this is, I mean, I don't tell the stories, but he would see something, you know, I don't know, a butt wiggle by an offensive lineman, and he was able to shoot a gap. And so all those big plays that you saw Junior make over the, you know, over the years, where he's just running through crazy, and then you get up and get the big fist pump, 70% of those were Junior doing his own thing.
Just freelancing.
Just freelancing. I saw something, coach. That's all you, I mean, for a guy like him and what he accomplished, that's all he had to say at a meeting. Okay, Junior.
And he obviously did, because it worked.
But I mean, when you get gashed with a guy running through, you know, you like to have a guy scraping over the top on an outside play the opposite direction, right? So you'd also, you know, it's feast or famine. And yeah. I think Polamalu at the end of his career, or in his prime, was the same way in that LeBeau defense. You're definitely right. But it's like, yeah, I studied like Ray Lewis, you know, was obviously at his prime. And I thought,
Jesse Tuggle
was way before my time.
I bet like you could have studied him. Come on.
Sure. But I meant even
Peers. You're talking Peers.
Correct. Peers that were in the game or defenses.
Urlacher.
You always watched. Urlacher was in a 4-3. Yeah. But but we taught Tampa 2 when we'd install our Tampa 2. You know, Ron Rivera,
Riverboat
Ron would teach us off of Urlacher's tape. Lance Briggs on being that backside, weak side linebacker. He'd teach our corners with the way that Charles Tillman would play in that cover two defense. So you definitely, you take who's best. And I mean, long story short, that's what I feel like for an organization who had an identity, but is nothing even close to that identity, which the Cleveland Browns are at 3-10. Like, from management on down, let's start looking at winning templates that are out there and start grabbing those winning pieces, right, and smushing them together, and it becomes who we are as the Cleveland Browns. Because in some cases, you can't say it's my way or the highway. No one does business that way. Not anybody. You know, you look at Steve Jobs had to study other people or was aware of other people, and that's what made him great. You know, you take little pieces of what everybody else does, you smush together, and you put your name on it. And that's what I feel like the Cleveland Browns need to do going into 2016.
I think it's even something like Rex Ryan alluded to that in his press conference last week about the defense, saying that, you know, I know he was being tongue-in-cheek, but that his D was too complicated and he had to figure out what's going on. So let me ask you then, okay, when you had Riverboat Ron, did you know at any point he would go on to be known as Riverboat Ron? Like, were there any signs of Riverboat Ron?
There was not. No.
Is that one of your favorite nicknames, Riverboat Ron?
Yes.
Yeah.
And the fact that you know him makes it even cooler.
Yeah. Well, you know him.
Well, but I meant for me to say Riverboat Ron every time I talk about the Panthers is fun.
It is fun. It's like big play gear.
Right.
We should put a Riverboat Ron dollar button on there. Like last year we went to Carolina. We saw old Riverboat Ron. 216-578-0850. 216-578-0850. Wanna give a shout out to @BlackJohnWhite. He said the man of 1,004 release points. Welcome to Raw is Johnny. That was a little Chris Jericho reference. And well played, sir.
And I want to reference this really quick because I not only read Johnny Manziel's comments, but then I read the Russell Wilson press conference as well, which becomes available to us. And it says the question is on if he has any trouble seeing the field while staying in the pocket. And these are those things that you thought Johnny Manziel should be studying and yearning for from guys that are doing it in the National Football League. And he says, I don't have a problem seeing it all. I think that I've been fortunate enough to play a lot of football just growing up and all that and in college and in the NFL now. I honestly think, one, first of all, you throw through lanes. I think also just anticipation, knowing where guys are going to be and knowing what the defense is. That's part of studying and preparation, but I don't have a problem seeing the field at all.
So what he's saying there is, I would call it maybe a little bit more of a careful way of saying that he does make faith throws, what Johnny called those faith throws. He knows where his guys are going to be. He's in sync with it. So he knows at times he's going to throw the football to a spot.
Yeah.
And that's what you have to do.
Well, all quarterbacks do.
Sure.
To a certain extent. Especially the younger players throw to a spot because that's what they're coached to do. You're expecting a guy. That's when you see the miscommunication between receiver. The receiver curls instead of finding that, that continuing that route 2 yards further into that middle of the zone to find that window. A quarterback's going to throw it to that window expecting your receiver with a catch radius to be able to get there and catch it.
All right, I got one. I just came across this on ESPN that I think is very, very interesting. We talk about these quarterbacks and clutch meter, something that I like to talk about, clutch meter. Here is, they've ranked the NFL's most clutch quarterbacks. And so what they've done is they looked at their QBR in the clutch. And the clutch is defined by fourth quarter or overtime of a game that is tied or within, they are trailing by 8 or fewer points. So one possession games. Who do you think the top 12 most clutch quarterbacks in the NFL are this year?
You want me to rattle off 12 names?
Yeah, give me 12. Or just go one, and I'll tell you if they're on there. You can give.
Brady.
Tom Brady is sixth.
Okay. Andy Dalton.
Not on the list.
Wow. Okay. Russell Wilson.
Well, only 30 quarterbacks have 30 or more plays in this situation, so it's possible that Andy Dalton didn't have a play in that situation, but probably not because all the other undefeated teams, their quarterbacks are right in those situations.
Russell Wilson.
He is seventh.
Wow, 6 and 7. Matt Ryan.
He is fifth.
5, 6, 7. Let's see. I'm getting there. Ben Roethlisberger.
Not on the list.
Okay. Josh McCown.
11th.
Hmm.
Yeah. I think that's a lot of San Diego, Baltimore.
Yeah.
Those games.
How about Flacco?
Not on the list.
Blake Bortles.
Not on the list.
Peyton Manning.
Not on the list. Let's go back to your MVP.
Oh, Cam. Okay.
Number one. Cam Newton, number one.
Okay. Number two is, I'm going to try and figure out number two. Carson Palmer.
He is number three.
Ah, dang. Carson Palmer. Number two. I want to get
so
number
two. So
you have
two. 1, 3, 5, 6, and 7 so far.
And 11.
Yeah.
Not famous Jameis. It's not Mariota.
Oh?
Jameis?
No.
Mariota.
Number two.
Really?
Marcus Mariota. Number two. He's had, come on, think of the Jacksonville game, the Oakland game. He's had some good performances late in games.
Yeah, I just know they don't have any
in clutch situations, he's 34 of 55 for 353, 3 touchdowns, 2 picks, 90 yards rushing.
Okay.
QBR of 84.4. So now you got 1, 2, 3. You're missing number four. Somebody that I just happen to think is terrific.
Terrific?
Uh-huh.
Aaron Rodgers?
Not on the list.
You think he's terrific.
Yeah. I really like this guy. One of my favorites.
Big play Gare does not play quarterback, so I know it's not him.
He's like the big play Gare of quarterbacks to me.
Really?
Yeah. Terrific. Starts with a T.
Okay.
As does this quarterback's first name.
Right. I already said Tom Brady, didn't I?
You did. That's not my guy.
Right.
Who's my guy?
I don't know who your guy is.
Theodore.
Oh, Theodore. Yeah, you're right.
He's number four.
He's number four. Okay.
Yeah. So you've got one, two, three, four, five, six, seven.
Okay. Who are the rest?
All right. You've got Eli Manning.
Okay.
Jay Cutler.
Okay.
Surprisingly, Jay Cutler on the list. Drew Brees.
Yeah, I was going to go there.
And Jameis Winston is number 10.
I said Jameis.
You did say him. Yeah. He wasn't number two, though. So that's your top 12 there. How about it? Hey, Shark's taking a picture of us here. The rest of the guys, so let's find out those guys you said were on. So Stafford was 13, Cousins 14, Tyrod Taylor 15, Dalton 16, Sam Bradford 17, Rodgers 18, Peyton 19, Roethlisberger 20, Osweiler 21. Number 22 was Philip Rivers. So those are the guys that were there. That's the clutch. The biggest fall off this year was Rivers, Eli Manning, and Roethlisberger, all down over 30% this season from where they were the year before. So there it is, clutch quarterback. Josh McCown, ladies and gentlemen, number 11 on the list.
I knew it.
Clutch quarterbacking, though, what I would say, given that you have Mariota and McCown on there, and we know how many wins they have accounted for, clutch quarterbacking, sadly, is only part of the situation, which is why, again, wins and losses might not be
all on the
team stat. Right.
Correct.
Or might not be a quarterback stat, might be more of a team stat. All right, when we come back, we're going to hear from the defensive coordinator of the Cleveland Browns, Jim O'Neill. But before we do that, we've got a couple guys on the line, so let's get to them. Jim in Rocky River. Jim.
Hey, how you doing? I'm going to make a comment. You guys were talking about Johnny Manziel, and, you know, he should study maybe Drew Brees, get a couple, you know, what he could take from that. What I would take from that, if I was Johnny, is I'll look at Drew Brees. I would look at a quarterback that has, throughout his career, great line, taller, faster receivers that can catch, and coaches that believe in him. That's what I would see.
Yes.
When I studied him.
You think, but who's he had that have been, Drew Brees hasn't had those prototypical receivers. You know,
he had
Jimmy Graham. Gosh.
Yeah, and we've got Marcus Travis Colston. Benjamin.
Marcus Colston is not fast, but he is tall.
And we've got Andrew Hawkins, right, who's 5'7". Yeah,
right. Lance Moore.
Lance Moore was not big. Brandon Cooks is not big. And then he made guys on the outside that were pure speed, one-trick ponies who couldn't succeed anywhere else succeed in his offense, which is why he's elite. And I'm talking about Robert Meacham and Devery Henderson,
yep,
who were awesome there.
And he had a lousy ground game like we do. He had a lousy line like we do. A lousy defense like we do. You're comparing apples and oranges. It's kind of like, I don't know if you guys ever ran track. I'm sure you have.
What do you mean? We're comparing what? Johnny Manziel to Drew Brees?
If that's what you're, yeah, well, that's what you guys suggested.
That if I'm Johnny Manziel, why wouldn't I want to study the nuances and the tricks of the trade from somebody with a similar height to me who has succeeded in the NFL in Drew Brees?
I think Drew Brees was, driving a Mercedes-Benz and Johnny's in a race with a used car. And so you can't derive the success that Drew Brees had based on receivers that are getting open, a better line, a running game, a coach that believes in you. It's a whole different way of looking at things. You're not just talking about delivery or that type of thing. You look at it because you're going to study his film, right?
So you're saying that Johnny Manziel, because he's not in the exact same situation as Drew Brees, can't learn anything from watching Drew Brees' tape? I would say that is incorrect.
I did not say that. But I said if you're looking at that and trying to derive reasons why Drew Brees was so successful at about the same height and same stature, you know, when you're 6 foot, barely 6 foot, and you've got two receivers that are 6'2", 6'3", there's a lot of a difference between 5'7", 5'8" receivers going out for a pass. Way
agreed.
Different.
Agreed.
And so that's exactly so. That's what we need, and that's what we don't have.
Well, hopefully Josh Gordon will be back. Hopefully we will draft one. I'm with you. I want big targets for Johnny Manziel. I think he needs them. I think it's imperative. Now, Russell Wilson, similar stature, same type of a guy, doesn't have the big targets. Jimmy Graham was absolutely awful while he was there.
Yep.
He's got Jermaine Kearse, who's a bit player on that team. But for the most part, it's been small receivers. Tyler Lockett,
Doug Baldwin.
These are not big guys. So I think there are a lot of things to learn from it. Drew Brees is very effective, as I said, with Lance Moore, with Brandon Cooks, with smaller wide receivers as well. It's just about understanding the things that can make you better. You can only control. Johnny Manziel can't control what his coach thinks of him. Johnny Manziel can't control who Ray Farmer selects for him at wide receiver. He's got to be the best that he can be. And I think studying a guy who's been very successful in the NFL just makes sense. I'm not saying he shouldn't study Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady. Of course he should. You should study all those guys. You should study the greats at what he does and find out if there are things that he can learn and incorporate into his game, because he does things, by the way, that they can't do with his athletic ability, his different release points, etc. So I think it's just about a continual learning, and I think if you're Johnny Manziel, you're always going to be learning. That's what you want to have happen. Let's get back to the phones real quickly here. 216-578-0850. James in Cleveland, welcome to the show.
Hey, what's up? I was impressed with Johnny as far as, I mean, I wasn't a Johnny guy, but his accuracy, I thought he was pretty accurate, you know, after watching this game. And a couple other things real quick. I was wondering why when Hartline went down, is Jeremy Lynch's, I think it's Lentz or something. He's still around. Another
Josh Lentz.
Josh Lentz.
He was a receiver that the Browns had. I thought it was Jeremy or something.
Josh Lentz, for a while, went to the Houston Texans practice squad. I will update that in the break. We got to take a break. Go ahead. No, we got to take a break. All right. When we come back, we'll hear from Jim O'Neill, and I'll update you on where Josh Lentz is. Only Browns fans would still be wondering what's going on with Josh Lentz. I got to love it. So he is on the Houston Texans practice squad. So there you go. Josh Lentz. Houston Texans practice squad. He has not played in a game. He does not have any statistics. All right, we'll be back with more CBD right after this.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Don't forget, join us tonight. Myself, Ken Carmen, head coach of Cleveland Browns, Mike Pettine. He won't be there, but we'll hear from him. But Isaiah Crowell will be there. And here, we're going to get the crow call. That's a real crow call, folks. He will be there. Bagley Road, Tony Kays in Berea, 7 to 8 for the Mike Pettine Coaches Show. One of the coaches on the team who's had a little bit of a rough go recently, but certainly enjoyed what happened on Sunday against the 49ers as his defense turned in an outstanding performance. 9 sacks on the day, harassing the 49ers all day long. Defense coordinator Jim O'Neill spoke with the media as he does every Thursday.
All right, great team win this past week against the 49ers. I thought our staff put together a good plan. I thought the players did a great job executing it. We had some individual guys that had exceptional efforts. In the secondary, the two Williams brothers, Kaywan and Tremont, had really good games for us. At the linebacker position, Armani Bryant and Nate Orchard were very productive for us in the run and pass game. And then up front with the defensive line, Dez Bryant continues to be a beast inside for us, and he was obviously very productive. It's great to get the win. It's great to feel this way after a win. Our guys definitely have some juice this week. We're excited to go up to Seattle. We know it's going to be a great challenge. It's a very good offense. They got weapons. We're off to a good start. I'm looking forward to Sunday.
Started the year when he was kind of, well, maybe at the end of last year, when he was a down lineman, and the kind of the growing pains, but what have you seen of him in that transition to decision?
Yeah, when we first got here, we were excited about him. He was a guy that we targeted when we were in Buffalo as a defensive coaching staff, as a guy we liked in the draft. So right when we got here, we were excited about him. We started him out as a defensive lineman. He played big end for us. Last year, he made some big plays in the preseason, kind of established himself what we thought in our first year here just as more of an interior pass rusher. When we had the injuries that we had last year in the D-line, he was thrusted into more first and second down duty, and he was doing a great job for us. He was really developing, and then he suffered the injury, which was a major loss for us. When we started the year this year, we thought he could help us some at rush linebacker, more as just as a true defensive end, not a guy that would drop into coverage a lot. As we got towards the end of training camp, we made the move for him to be totally in the outside backer room. And as he's gotten the hang of all the outside linebacker techniques, what his role is within each scheme, he's really gotten better every week. And he's a guy that can be a difference maker. I mean, he's got difference maker ability in the run and pass game. He can do some things that are, I don't know how he does it, as far as how he can get skinny and get, you know, slip in between two blocks. But he's a guy that I think is only going to get better the more he plays in the scheme, okay, and stays at that position.
Has he gotten better against the run?
Yes. He has. He's gotten a lot better. I mean, it's different when you're playing on the edge than inside because there's more space. There's more time before you actually engage that block. So it's different with your hand placement. You don't want to get off a block just as quick as you might inside because the back's not coming to you as quick. You got to make sure you hold the edge. So those are all things that he's getting more and more comfortable with as the year goes on.
Relative to, I know, against the better quarterbacks, obviously there were some bad days, and you know you get a chance to not have to face one of those guys, and you know you have your best day.
It was great to get the win. I mean, winning's like nothing else in this profession, in this league. I love my job. Usually by 3 o'clock on Monday, I'm over it, whether we won or lost. But it's good. The players have worked so hard. You know, the coaching staff's worked hard. It's good to get a reward. So it was big for us.
When you play a running quarterback, like a guy who can scramble and get outside the pocket, yeah, like Russell Wilson or even Johnny, how does that change how you scheme defensively and kind of changes the spacing of the defense for the receiver?
Yeah, you got to be disciplined in your rush lanes. You know, you got to probably have somebody account for him. You know, you won't usually see a lot of two-man coverage where you have five underneath guys in man coverage and then two deep safeties when you're playing a running quarterback, because if he does get out, he's going for a long way. And then, you know, with some guys who are statues back there, you can't be as exotic with some of your pressure packages because you can't leave an open edge. You know, you got to make sure you have edges to your rush. So you got to change some things. But a lot of that's situational-based, hash-based, down and distance-based, you know, you know, we're still going to roll the dice some. Like most teams will, but it's got to be the right shot in the game.
The role that Wilson's on in the last four games, can you tell what he's doing better?
He's not turning the ball over. He's not taking sacks. He's truly a dual threat quarterback. He's a guy that can make plays running the ball, and he can make plays throwing the ball above his shoulder. He does a great job buying time. And then getting to the ball to his playmakers downfield. They do a great job staying alive in their routes. They're giving him a lot on offense. He's got flexibility to get the offense in the right play. So he's playing at a high level right now. He really is.
Have they made adjustments losing their best running backs as the season's gone on?
No, their run game has been what it's been. You know, I know the two guys that they just added, the Bryce Brown kid. You know, I remember him in Philly when LeSean McCoy got hurt, and he had a pretty productive year for him. So I don't think that what they do from a run game point of view is going to be much different than what they were doing in Philly with some of the zone read stuff and the zone stuff. And then Michael, they just picked back up. He was on their team last year, who played a lot for him. So I don't see them changing much. You know, with what they had with the other guys.
Playing time for Gaines, how did he make out the start to finish there?
I thought he did a good job. I thought he's gotten better every week. I mean, obviously, the Pittsburgh game was a little bit of a growing experience for him, and I thought he came out the next week. He battled, played a lot for us. He did a good job, and then, you know, I thought, you know, to date this past week against the 49ers, he had one of his better games. I thought he did a much better job tackling, which was big for him. We challenged him with that early in the week, and he did a good job coming through for us.
What do you think the difference was Sunday for you guys that allowed you to get the 9 sacks?
Well, it helps when you have the lead because it allows you to get into some more passing opportunities. I thought our guys did a really good job on early downs, getting them in obvious passing situations. So we either won in the run game or we did a great job in coverage, forcing an incomplete pass. I thought our secondary played really well. We matched routes. We bought time for those guys. And I thought we had a good plan, and the players executed it.
Nate Orchard to get his first 2 sacks, he said it was like a huge relief, you know?
Yeah.
Just what have you seen from him lately and in that game specifically? How much how positive was that for him to do?
Well, it's great for Nate. You know, I mean, it's always good when a guy gets his first sack as an NFL player. Like I said a couple weeks ago, he's been close a bunch, you know, and sacks come in bunches. You know, we found that out this past Sunday. We've had a bunch of guys that have been close. You know, we just haven't finished the deal or the ball's gotten out. But Nate's a guy that comes to work every day. He does everything you tell him. Works hard in the meeting room. Works hard at practice. Takes almost every scout team rep for us at defensive end, and then turns around and gets real reps. So there aren't too many guys on our defense that work harder than him. And he studies. It was great to see him get those two sacks, because I know that the media's been on him a little bit. So that's, I'm sure it's a weight lifted off of his shoulders.
And he did that playing, he was playing strong side, right? Like he normally does?
Yes. Yeah. He's our strong side backer. He usually goes to what the close call is or to the tight end side.
Does any, we talk about crowd noise affecting the offense. Does it affect the defense at all when they really get loud?
Yeah, usually, like when we're at home, we try to have less moving parts or double calls in our defensive game plan, just because you don't want a guy not to get a check or communication. When you're on the road, you can do a little more of that stuff because as a defense, you can communicate. I would think for an offense, it would go the opposite. So at home, they can probably do some more checking and some more double call stuff because it's easy to communicate, whereas on the road, they got to probably be a little bit simpler or be really good with their nonverbal communication.
Wait, I'm confused. I asked does that crowd noise affect your guys' ability to communicate with each other if that crowd is yelling for the Seahawks offense?
No, usually when a home offense is on the field, you can hear a pin drop in a stadium. So it's very easy for a defense to communicate. Where it's hard for us to communicate is when we're at home in front of the dog pound, which we love, you know, but that it's when you're at home, it's hard on the defense.
Jim, he's got almost three games going against teams that are all fighting for a playoff spot. Yeah. What do you want to see from your side of the football over the 3 weeks to build upon what you did on Sunday?
I want to play well enough that puts us in position to win the game. You know, that's our goal every week. I think it's a great opportunity with the three opponents we have left. It's a great opportunity this week. Our guys expect to go down there and win a football game. It's the same thing every week.
Within the context of obviously it seemed to be a nice team win, to extrapolate a little bit out of that and ask a Manziel question, what kind of a spark was Manziel for the defense, even though that's kind of an intangible thing?
I wouldn't, that's hard for me to answer. That'd probably be a better question for some of our players. I don't know. Usually when the offense is out there, I'm sitting on the bench, I'm looking at the stills, I'm looking at what I've shown, what they've shown, I'm trying to game plan my next possession, what I want to show them, what I'm doing to take away. I rarely see our offense play, so I wouldn't know.
Insofar as any quarterback, a starting quarterback, is going to be a team leader to some extent. How are you guys in your set of the ball looking at Manziel at this point?
As far as a team leader?
Yeah, however you happen to be looking, the background is, it seems obvious that any quarterback on any team is an overall team leader.
So yeah, I think Johnny's done a great job this year. I'm in the building late. He's in the building late. I'm in the building early. He's in the building early. So he's here. He's working. Our leaders on defense are Carlos Dansby and Dante Whitner. Those are the two guys that lead us. So that, for me to speak about, is Johnny leading the whole team? That's hard for me to say.
Good stuff from defense coordinator Jim O'Neill there. It's got to be nice for him after what he's endured recently for this to have a game like that. And hopefully they can build on it with a very, very tough, tough opponent coming up this week in Seattle.
I do. And I think that, in the words of Mike Pettine, control the controllables. Jim O'Neill cannot go out and play on the football field. And as he mentioned multiple times, that they had a good plan, they had a good week of practice, and they went out and executed. And I think our playmakers on our defense showed up. And I think if we can create a similar plan to stop what the Seattle Seahawks do very, very well, then we have an opportunity to go out and play solid football and be in these games, and we hope to have an opportunity to win.
Yes, we certainly do. All right, we're going to take a break here. When we come back at the top of the hour, we'll be very excited to be joined by Liz Matthews from Seattle, Seahawks reporter and producer for ESPN 710, to preview the Hawks and the Browns. We'll talk to her, and then after that, we'll just compare the entire teams in that 215 segment, then 230, John DeFilippo. Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.